Hello, hello, hello. Here's Marlenka again. After a brief absence, happy to be back in the city the earth needs, Auroville. This morning I'm going to read from Sri Aurobindo's essays, Divine and Human. Sat. What is truth? Said Pilate, confronted with a mighty messenger of the truth. Not jesting, surely. Not in a spirit of shallow lightness, but turning away from the Christ with the impatience of the disillusioned soul for those who still use high words that have lost their meaning and believe in great ideals, which the test of the event has proved to be fallacious. What is truth? This phantom so long pursued, so impossible to grasp firmly. That a man young, beautiful, gifted, eloquent, and admired should consent to be crucified for its sake. Have not circumstance and event justified the half-pitying, half-sorrowful question of the Roman governor? The messenger suffered on the cross, and what happened to the truth that was his message? As Christ himself foresaw, it has never been understood, even by its professors. For 500 years, it was a glorious mirage for which thousands of men and women willingly underwent imprisonment, torture, and death in order that Christ's kingdom might come on earth and felicity possess the nations. But the kingdom that came was not Christ's. It was Constantine's, it was Hildebrand's, it was Alexander Borgia's. For another 13 centuries, the message was, what? Has it not been the chief support of fanaticism, falsehood, cruelty, and hypocrisy? The purveyor of selfish power, the keystone of a society that was everything Christ had denounced. Jesus died on the cross for the benefit, it would seem, of those who united to slay him. The Sadducee, atheist and high priest, the Pharisee, the zealot, the hypocrite and persecutor, and the brutal, self-seeking, callous military Roman. Now, in its last state, after such a lamentable career, Christ's truth stands finally rejected by the world's recent enlightenment as a hallucination or a superstition which sometimes helpfully, sometimes harmfully amused the infancy of the human intellect. This history is written in two pronounced characters to be the exact type of all messages that the world has received. But is it not in some sort a type of the fate of all truth? What idea has stood successfully the test of a prolonged and pitiless inquiry? What ideal has stood successfully the test of time? Has not mankind been busy for the last 50 years and more, denying almost all that it had formerly affirmed? And now, that under the name of rationalism or materialism, the denial has shaped itself into some form of workably practical affirmation. Mankind is again at its work of denying its denial and rearranging, but this time doubtingly, its old affirmations. The skepticism of Pilate would therefore seem to have some excuse and recurrent human experience. Is there indeed such a thing as truth? Beyond, of course, that practical truth of persistent material appearances by which we govern our lives. The truth of death, birth, hunger, sexuality, pain, pleasure, commerce, money-making, ease, discomfort, ambition, failure, and success. Has not indeed the loftiest of our philosophical systems declared all things here to be Maya? And if Maya is illusion, a deceit of the thinking consciousness, then indeed there can be no truth anywhere in the world except that indefinable existence which we cannot comprehend and which, after all, Buddhism, not without logic and plausibility, setting it down as another and more generalized sanskara, a false sensation of consciousness in the eternal void, denies. And yet, man is so constituted that he must follow after truth whether it is attained or not. Something in man, secret, masterful, essential to his existence, forbids him to be satisfied with a falsehood. The moment it is perceived, or even believed to be a falsehood, he rejects it, and the thing begins to crumble. If he persists in his rejection, it cannot last. Yesterday it was. Today we see it tottering. Tomorrow we shall look for it and find that it is no longer. It is passed back into Prakriti. It has dissolved into that of which it was made. For Shraddha is the condition of all existence in consciousness, and that to which Shraddha is denied ceases to have existence, whether here or elsewhere. It is not, neither in this world nor in another. We may not unreasonably infer from this importance and this imperative necessity that truth does really exist and everything is not illusion. If then truth is always escaping our hold and leaving us to disillusionment and derision, it may be because we have neither formed any clear conception of what truth itself is, nor taken hold of the right means by which it can be grasped. Let us leave aside for a while Buddha's world of sanskaras. Let us put aside, packed away in an accessible corner of the brain, Shankara's Gospel of Maya, and start instead from the old Vedantic beginnings, Om Tat Sat, that Brahman is the thing that is. And verily, all this, everything of which we are aware, is Brahman. It is at least possible that we may return from this inquiry with a deeper idea both of sanskaras and of Maya, and may find that we have answered Pilate's question by discovering the nature and conditions of truth. I'm speaking of the fundamental truth, the truth of things, and not merely the fact about particulars, or of particulars only as their knowledge forms a basis or a help to the discovery of fundamental truth. The fact that a particular sort of contact makes me uncomfortable is nothing in itself except insofar as it throws light upon the general causes of pain. The nature, origin, and purpose of pain is the fundamental truth that I seek about the sensational reaction to contact. This law of pain, moreover, is not so fundamental as the truth about the nature, origin, and purpose of sensation and contact themselves, of which pain is a particularity, an example, a modification. This more fundamental truth becomes again itself particular when compared with the truth about the nature, origin, and purpose of existence, of which sensation and contact are only particular circumstances. In this, we arrive at the one fundamental truth of all. And a little consideration will show that if we really and rightly know that, the rest ought and probably will reveal themselves at once and fall into their places. That being known, all is known. Our ancestors perceived this truth of the fundamental unity of knowledge and sought to know Sat first. Confident that Sat, being known, the different tattvas, laws, details, and particulars of Sat would more readily yield up their secret. The moderns follow another thought, which also has a truth of its own. They think that since being is one, the knowledge of the particulars must lead to the knowledge of the fundamental unity, and they begin therefore at the bottom and climb upwards. A slow, but one might imagine, safe method of procession. "Little flower in the crannies," cries Tennyson, addressing a pretty blossom in the wall in lines which make good thought, but execrable poetry. "If I could but know what you are, I should know what man and God is." Undoubtedly, the question is whether, without knowing God, we can really know the flower. Know it, and not merely its name and form or all the details of its name and form. Rupa we can know and analyze by the aid of science. Nama by the aid of philosophy. But Swarupa? It would seem that some third instrument is needed for that consummation of knowledge. The senses and reason, even though aided by microscope and telescope, cannot show it to us. The form of that stands night in the ken of sight. Mind and speech are not permitted to lead us to it. Even the metaphysical logic of a Shankara stops short of the final victory. This realization is thought not to be obtained by logic. All these various disabilities are due to one compelling cause. They are because Sat, the truth of existence, Brahman, the reality of things which fills and supports their idea and form, is beyond the recognizable and analyzable elements of idea and form. It is subtler even than elemental subtlety, and therefore not to be deduced, induced, inferred, or discovered by a reasoning which proceeds from a consideration of the elements of name and form and makes that its standard. This is a truth which even the greatest philosophers, Vedantic or un-Vedantic, are apt to forget. But the Shruti insist on it always. Nevertheless, mankind has for some thousands of years been attempting obstinately and with passion to discover the truth by the very means which the Shruti has forbidden. Such error is natural and inevitable to the human consciousness. For the angel in man is one who has descended out of light and bliss into the darkness, twilight and half-light here, the darkness of matter, the twilight of vital consciousness, the broken half-lights of the mind, and the master impulse of his nature is to yearn passionately towards the light from which he has fallen. Unable to find it at once, too little calm and discerning to perfect himself patiently, it's natural that man in his eagerness should grasp at other instruments, meant for a limited utility, and straining them beyond their capacity, compel them to serve this, his supreme object, which is always to recover the perfect light, and by that recovery, to recover also what dwells only in the perfect light, the perfect and unfailing bliss. We shall pause for now, for today, and continue from this point in the next episode next week. Thank you so much for listening. May the light be with you 24/7. to pursue the truth. Bye for now. Marlenka signing off.
This is Auroville Radio, voices from the City of Dome.